Roto Experts in the Morning with your host Greg Sussman, Adam Ronis, and Scott Engel is on now.
It is Thursday, October 20th, 2016, and this is the Roto Experts in the Morning. I am Greg Sussman alongside the King, Scott Engel, and Adam Ronis. Week 7 of the NFL season is upon us. A very good NLCS is upon us. The ALCS is no longer upon us as that is over. What's going on, Scotty?
Interesting day. You know, the Indians finally making it back to the World Series for the first time since 1997. And a very entertaining debate last night.
You were telling me right before we started the show here that you checked out most of the debate last night.
Yeah, it's I absolutely love the part where Trump tried to attack Hillary on her history, and then she just destroyed him right there. I think that was, to me, that was the highlight of the debate.
And did you consider yourself an undecided voter, or you knew going into the election, into the night, who you wanted to vote for?
I think I knew. Into the night, who I wanted to vote for.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ronis, what's going on, man? How was your night?
Busy, man. Watching some baseball. I saw a little bit of debate, and I had to do some writing, so it was a busy night.
Busy night. Well, we are live here tonight. We'll be probably just as busy because you have the NLCS tonight. Kenta Maeda on the mound against John Lester. Should be a good one. Dodgers and Cubs. And, of course, Thursday night football. A lot of fantasy implications here for a lot of people with Green Bay and Chicago. Scott.
And also, I'll be chatting live at 7 p.m. Eastern tonight on rotoexperts.com, one of three live chats on weekdays, part of your exclusive Edge in-season fantasy football package on rotoexperts.com. Enter free radio at checkout for a special discount.
There you go. So tonight, a ton of implications. We're going to preview Thursday Night Football in a little bit, but I do want to start with news from tonight. That's kind of our headline, and that's Eddie Lacy is not going to play tonight. He has been officially ruled out. I think we all saw the tea leaves on this. We didn't expect it. Now, the fact that he's ruled out rather than doubtful or questionable may throw some shade on that he's coming back quickly from this particular injury. We'll see. But Lacy is out tonight. Now, if you, Scotty, are reading what people are saying and the beat reporters in Green Bay and what's going on, who is the one guy you want to own in, I'll put this in quotations, the Green Bay backfield?
I think it's Ty Montgomery. It's a short week. They went to him 10 times last week. Don Jackson kind of knows the offense, being on the practice squad. But how much work is he going to get? You know, this team doesn't put a high emphasis on the running game. Even when Lacy is in there, they don't give him enough work. I certainly wouldn't be using Nile Davis when he's in Green Bay for less than a week. Very interesting bids I saw in one league that I'm in. All of them went for over $200. And I thought that was exorbitant on a guy like Don Jackson. We don't know how long Lacy's going to be out. He could be out indefinitely. So maybe Nile Davis makes sense in the longer term. But for tonight, I want Ty Montgomery. If I have to have a running back, I'll take Don Jackson if I'm desperate because he's been with the organization longer. But if I'm desperate in some leagues, I just picked up Mike Gillisley this morning with the LeSean McCoy hamstring injury. There's Mike Davis out there. I'd rather use those guys than Don Jackson.
What about you, Ronis? Is Ty Montgomery your guy tonight if you could only choose one?
Yeah, I think we saw them utilize him last week in a similar fashion. He played a lot of snaps out of the backfield, caught 10 passes on 12 targets. So I think they'll do that again. Now Davis just acquired this week, so it's tough to learn that playbook and get familiar with the scheme in just a couple of days. So that's the way I would go to I don't want to spend a lot of money on Nile Davis. He's a guy that needs volume. He does have big playability, but I think Jackson is a sneaky ad. Maybe he can potentially be the guy, but this week I don't see many touches. Montgomery is the guy that I would be looking at tonight.
I also agree that if you can only choose one, Ty Montgomery is the guy that I'm looking at as well. Just Scotty, like you said, it's a short week. And the fact is, they couldn't get Nile Davis up to speed this week. Don Jackson wasn't even active when they knew Eddie Lacy was very banged up last week. I think we see a lot of what we saw on Sunday. Montgomery out of the backfield, Montgomery on short passes. I also think we're going to see quite a bit of Jeff Janis tonight. If Ty Montgomery is playing a lot of running back, Janis is going to be in that third wide receiver role in the Devontae Adams spot. So I think Jeff Janis could have a surprisingly big game here tonight.
I'm not seeing it. Okay. You know, maybe a big catch, maybe two significant receptions. I think a lot of Randall Cobb tonight. I think a lot of Montgomery. You know, Jordy's going to get his amounts of targets. I could see Janis maybe being like the fifth option.
Well, who are the four? How is he not the fourth option?
Yeah, I would say like no Devontae Adams tonight. Right. Then he's. I forgot about that. He's probably the fourth option,
right?
But not enough to make me consider him in fantasy this week.
Okay,
way too many better options.
Fair enough. I just thought, and I know it's not a big bye week. I just thought desperation. I think he could have a night. So unfortunately, Eddie Lacy wasn't the only one that was hurt yesterday. As we keep saying week after week, guys, Tuesday, Wednesday, things just keep leaking out. They keep leaking out, and it doesn't stop. Yeah, it legitimately does not stop. Carlos Hyde, we saw, showed up with a sling, and now Chip Kelly's like, yeah, he's not playing this week, which means Mike Davis, Sean Drone are the options in San Francisco. Are you leaning either way, number one, Ronis, and do you want to start either, number two?
I think there are some desperate teams this week, so I think Davis is in play. He'll probably get the majority of the touches. We'll see Drone in the backfield, maybe catching some passes. Kelly did say he was going to play everyone there in that backfield. So we saw Davis last week play more snaps than Drone, so I would go with him. It's Tampa Bay's been overall good, but the last few weeks they haven't been as good against the run. But again, it's a desperation play at this point, but there are some teams that are. I mean, there's a lot of injuries going on right now where you might be forced to play Mike Davis. So I could see myself in a league or two where I'm desperate, probably plugging him in. Not feeling great about it, but it looks like he'll at least get the majority of the touches in that backfield.
Yeah, you know, he may get the majority of touches. It's what he can do with those touches. Playing Tampa Bay this week, not exactly a scary matchup, certainly for running back. I'm just worried that if I start Mike Davis and he fumbles or he has a bad few runs, Chip Kelly go to the next guy. If Sean Drone doesn't do well, go to the next guy. I just don't have any trust in anybody in this backfield.
I think if you play in a standard league, it's definitely Davis. Best shot of a touchdown. Somebody's got to finish off drives here, and it's either going to be Kaepernick or Davis if they get near the goal line, which they will. So I'll take my shot with Davis at a flex if I'm desperate.
Continuing on with these running back injuries that don't ever seem to stop.
No.
And I have said it over and over and over on this show that injury optimism is the worst thing that we can do. And Doug Martin was coming back out of the bye. Mm-hmm. He was going to be healthy. He was ready to go. The schedule was incredibly favorable. As Ronis had pointed out, they ran Jaquizz Rodgers into the ground because, hey, listen, they knew there was a bye coming and that Doug Martin was coming back. Well, not so quickly, my friends. Doug Martin had a setback, re-injures that hamstring over the weekend, and now Dirk Koetter says, well, he's week to week. And that sounds to me like, guys, he basically is back where he started, week to week. Week to week could mean IR all of a sudden. That would not surprise any of us, I don't think. So now week to week means he's out for, I don't know, let's say 3 weeks. Let's say maybe a month. By the time that happens, 3 to 4 weeks from now, and I'm just reading, I'm just guessing, obviously, we're at week 10, 11, with just a couple weeks left in our fantasy regular seasons. If you're a Doug Martin owner, can you drop him, Scott?
It really depends on the context of your roster. You know, I guess it becomes like a Deion Lewis situation. You don't know when he's going to come back. I'm thinking of cutting Ben Roethlisberger right now,
yep.
One of my
leagues. We'll get to that in a second, yep.
It really depends on your situation. You know, if there's a guy that you have to have, go out and make the cut. D. Vasco on Twitter says, how do I bench Rodgers with all the potential volume? And that's we saw 30 carries for 100 yards. And, you know, as Adam pointed out, you know, that's not a lot. This is a guy that's 5'6", 205. You give him the ball 30 times for one game, you get away with it. You do it maybe two games, you get away. This guy is not built for a big load over the long haul. you're going to start seeing some of Peyton Barber. There's not going to be 30 carry games. This guy just could not physically handle it, in my estimation. I feel like if people are going to start thinking, oh, Jacquizz Rodgers going to get a ton of volume every week, just because that was the script last week doesn't mean it's the script this week, especially with a guy who's 5'6", 205. Just because you saw potential volume in the last game doesn't mean you're going to see it big. We could see an even split between him and Peyton Barber for all we know. So I don't think Jacquizz Rodgers is somebody you can count on.
I think you have to start him this week. They're going against the 49ers, who are getting absolutely destroyed by everybody. They've allowed at least 174 rushing yards in three straight games, 9 rushing touchdowns. Everyone is destroying them right now. So especially without Navarro Bowman. Ever since he went down, they have just been getting gashed. So I think this week at least, long term,
I don't disagree with you. I'm saying in the longer term, you cannot expect Jacquizz Rodgers.
He's not going
to
be able to hold
last.
Up over this workload. And you saw it in that game. As the game went on and the more carries he get, he just was not as good.
I think it depends on who your other options are, too.
I agree with you guys. It depends on who your other options are. However, I think Jacquizz Rodgers, just after seeing what he did and how many times he touched the ball and how little they trust Jameis Winston, he's an absolute must-start for me this week. And it's possible going forward. I know you mentioned Peyton Barber. I'm going to be honest with you. Until about 1 minute ago, until you mentioned Peyton Barber, I had no idea who that was. So I thought Jacquizz Rodgers, seeing what he did just a couple weeks ago, he's somebody.
If he's 2.5, 3 weeks from now, if he's still carrying the ball 25 games, I'll be shocked.
Well, I don't know if they're.
He's going to wear out if they keep doing this to him.
He might. He absolutely might. But I think the theory is, at least in Dirk Cutter, is that Doug Martin would be back by the time they wear Jacquizz Rodgers out, you know?
Yes, I can see that.
That's like the thought process, I think.
Already a setback, not good.
No, it's not good, and that's why I asked. I know we had a pretty good argument about Doug Martin yesterday, I think. And unfortunately, Ronis, would you feel, given the state of injuries, given the state of teams right now, would you feel comfortable dropping Doug Martin?
I would not at this point. We really don't have extensive report on that injury and what it is, and I think I would hold him at this point until there's further news.
Okay. Well, would you also hold Ben Roethlisberger, who Scott just alluded to? He's considering dropping in several leagues.
You know what, though? Thinking it through, though, I'm 4-2, and if I could have Roethlisberger for my playoff run, I don't want to put him out there. I think I have enough roster spots right now to play with that I can keep him. I think it all depends on your situation.
I don't think you can. There's too many conflicting reports right now. Oh, he was going to be back in week 9. Oh, he's missing 4 to 6 weeks. Oh, now it's 2 to 3 weeks. Then I'm seeing other reports where Ben is tough. Don't be surprised if he plays week 9. So I just think there's too many different reports. There's nothing concrete. I would not be surprised if he is back in week 9 at this point. We have seen him come back from injuries quick before. He'll go out there. He'll play a little banged up. So there's nothing official at this point. It's a variety of reports, so I would hold on to him if I could.
Not every roster can hang on to an injured quarterback when you don't know who's coming back. That's going to be tough, obviously. It depends, as you always like to say, Scotty, on your roster construction. I feel like you probably want to hold on because, like Rona said, you don't really know the deal with Roethlisberger. Just like you don't really
know
the deal
with Doug
Martin.
Could be anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks.
I think it's the same with Doug Martin, which is the frustrating
But you know
thing.
What, though? Let's say it's the 6 weeks, okay? You know, basically puts him back at the end of my regular season.
Right.
And if I'm in the playoffs, I want Roethlisberger.
Sure. And you want Doug Martin, too.
Yeah.
But if you're a Doug Martin owner, where you draft him, what you spent on him, you may not make the playoffs, unfortunately.
It all depends.
Of
you know,
course.
Who else you drafted,
absolutely.
How you've worked the waiver wire, what kind of trades.
Absolutely.
You know, with all due respect, I don't know if you can say that because that means that you just haven't sat and done much with your roster.
Well, I only say this in looking at a couple of my leagues that the owners have Doug Martin. One scored 150 points last week, so he's okay. The other one is in big trouble. And it just, again, it's how your roster was set. It's what other injuries you've incurred. There's a lot that goes into it. But if you're a Doug Martin owner and you're sitting here at 1-5, or you're sitting here at 2-4, you might not be able to wait on Doug Martin to come back.
Yeah, like
you
especially said, if you want to take flyers on a Gillisley or a Davis.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely, and you mentioned Mike Gillisley, and I'm happy he did so because LeSean McCoy, who's had a history of hamstring issues, guys, he can't finish practice due to a hamstring injury. The MRI says it's mild to moderate, which means what to us, Ronis?
Nothing right now. I mean, we're going to have to wait the next couple days and see what the you know, update is that he could easily play Sunday. He could sit out. I mean, that
you
really
know somebody's going to call you, Ronis, and say, "Is he going to play?"
I don't know.
Somebody's going to tweet you or call you and say, "Ronis, tell me if McCoy's going to play."
Yeah, we just don't know at this point. So, I mean, the thing is to go out and get Gillislee if he's out there, especially if you're a McCoy owner, which you probably should have seen over the last couple weeks anyway, and especially with that scare on Sunday. So. Just have Gillislee ready to go. He'll be a nice start if McCoy is out because we know the Bills want to run the football, and we've seen Gillislee flash a little bit here. He had 6 for 60 last week with a touchdown. Again, that was against the 49ers where anyone who suits up can run on them. But we know Gillislee should get the bulk of the touches in that backfield.
Yeah, Miami can be hurt against the run. Plus, revenge game. It was the Dolphins that gave up on Gillislee.
Oh, get the hell out of here with the revenge narrative.
He would love to stick it to him and say, "Oh, you guys gave up on me here. I'm starting for another team. I'm at least going to get in the end zone."
Wasn't Mike Gillislee on several teams, though?
He started out with the Dolphins.
Oh, God, come on.
He was fine. Don't believe it. You'd be a skeptic.
He was with the Dolphins, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
They gave up on him.
So did the Cardinals.
The Dolphins were the team that drafted him. Revenge game.
Oh, you really buy into this ridiculous narrative, huh?
Oh, because you don't agree with it, you call it ridiculous?
Well,
I've seen it work.
Have you seen it work? You've just seen players have good games.
No, I've seen it work. I've seen me predict the revenge games, and I've seen it pan out.
So I think.
So what I'll do is I'll start keeping a list.
Sure.
And then you'll never call it ridiculous again.
Oh, so
there's a lot that failed, though, to be honest.
Yeah, there are. But you know, I look at every situation for individual. It's like I'm not buying the Sam Bradford revenge game script because Philadelphia's got a good defense.
But that's ridiculous. It's a revenge game. It's the same thing.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, but.
Can
the player impose his will? There's a difference. I just said. That the Dolphins can be run on.
Right.
And
so you're playing the matchup.
Correct.
You're not playing
I'm playing the matchup, but I think the revenge game adds something to it.
Oh, I don't see that. See, that's not fair.
Yeah.
Because you're saying, listen.
I don't think Sam Bradford's capable of imposing his will on that Philadelphia defense.
So
and while
out,
he's playing good regular football, he's not playing that good fantasy football.
So wouldn't that be the ultimate revenge?
Correct.
He was just traded to begin the year. So why is that not a revenge game? That's the problem with it. You pick and choose what you
correct.
Fit your narrative.
I pick and choose based on the reasons.
When there's no revenge then.
Correct.
There's no revenge
You're a guy who always talks about logic. I'm talking intangibles. It's hard to quantify. That's what you got to understand here. Okay? Gillislee, the Dolphins game up to it. If the guy's suiting up as a starter, there would he not like nothing better than to stick it to the organization that gave up
Bradford
to him.
Bradford doesn't. They
I'm
going
to get to that in a minute. I'm going to get to that in a minute. He's nothing better to stick it to the organization, and with the matchup, he's got the opportunity to do it. Bradford, on the other hand, we're talking about a guy that's had 2 1 touchdown games, no 300-yard games, facing the fourth best pass defense in the NFL with not a lot but a lot of weapons. I don't think as much as he wants.
So most of your analysis right there was matchup based.
So
a lot of it was, yes.
Right. So it's matchup. How's
here's
revenge then?
Hold on. Here's what I said. Scott, you just talked about where you said Rodas and I were ignoring intangibles, right? That's what you said.
Yeah.
Right? You not putting words in your mouth. You said the intangibles. But as Rodas just pointed out, everything you just described is a matchup.
He's right. I'm hooking the intangibles together with the matchup.
But the ultimate revenge game is when the matchup doesn't look good, and because it's a revenge game, the quarterback or the player comes out and performs well. You pointed out that Miami.
Oh, that would be a beautiful story, but, you know,
right,
it's
that's
like,
the
I can't base
game.
My starting lineup on that, though.
That's what I'm saying. I totally agree with you. You can't.
I'm going back to your original point that revenge game is totally ridiculous. And it's not.
But to point it out with Mike Gillislee, you know, it's one thing in my opinion to point it out. I was going to get to this. To point it out with DeSean Jackson, who is obviously a good player, cut by the Eagles.
Yeah.
His first game back against the Eagles.
Yeah.
There's something there. There's an extra motivation there.
Percy Harvin, you know, against the Vikings, you know.
There's an extra.
That was like his one good regular season
game.
So I'll
give you that,
Seahawk.
Right? It's a good player with an extra something there, right?
Like, yeah, an extra edge.
An extra edge.
There you go. Matchup, extra edge.
Okay,
that's
this match with Mike Gillislee has nothing to do with an extra edge. He's a backup running back for a Buffalo Bills team who has a good matchup. Sam Bradford has, without question, if you want to buy into the revenge game narrative, if you want to buy into that,
here's
Scott,
what you're not
you
considering.
Have to say that Bradford has
here's
an extra
what you're not
edge
considering.
This
is the difference with a revenge game. When they get down by the stripe, Gillislee's going to want the ball badly, and they're going to give it
one
to him, and he's going to get it in.
So when Bradford is by the stripe, don't you think he's going to want to throw a touchdown badly?
I don't know if he can impose his will. I think Gillislee has. Gillislee's going to be in the huddle. He's going to be like, give me the bleeping ball. I want to get in the end zone really badly. Sam Bradford is not the type of guy who can impose his will in a matchup like this.
The matchup, though, again, we're talking about the extra edge, right? Sam Bradford's going to have the extra edge, quote unquote, because he's facing.
But he has a bad matchup, though, and he doesn't.
He's not a quality fantasy player. It's just a matchup thing.
He's not a quality. No, it's not just a matchup thing.
We're talking about a revenge game, which is just a real-life edge.
He wants it to be a revenge game, but it can't be.
Why is Gillislee a quality player? How much have we seen from him to, you know, peg him as a quality player? He's a backup.
I would put more of my money on him than I would in Bradford.
Why?
This
You've
week
seen more
because of the matchup, like we said.
So you're doing this basically a matchup analysis, not revenge.
Not pure matchup. I think the revenge script gives him a little bit of an extra emotional edge.
But it
and football is a game of emotion.
But it doesn't for Bradford.
Don't think Bradford's capable of imposing his will against a good pass defense when he doesn't have a lot of upside.
You said that Gillislee would demand the bleeping ball in the huddle at the goal line. Because of the extra edge of wanting to beat Miami.
Yeah.
How do you think that, and if Sam Bradford gets to the goal line, he doesn't say, I want to throw this ball? How do you, I don't understand.
I've said it like six times already.
It doesn't make sense, though.
Bradford is not a good fantasy player.
I don't care about fantasy. It makes no
difference.
We're
talking about fantasy football here.
You're talking about a revenge game.
No, we're talking about the type of numbers that we want to get from a guy.
You're talking about a revenge
game match. Sam Bradford is not capable of opposing his will in the red script this week.
So then you don't buy into the revenge game then. That's fine.
No, I buy into the revenge game with Gillislee and not Bradford.
When you deem it acceptable.
Okay, let me try to explain this to you a different way.
Please.
Okay?
Yeah.
Fantasy is what we're talking about here, right?
Okay, yeah.
I think you can get good fantasy numbers from Mike Gillislee in a revenge game strip in a good matchup this week. I do not think that Sam Bradford can give you good fantasy production. It is a revenge game from a pure NFL perspective,
right?
But I don't think it's a good fantasy revenge game.
And let me just throw this last question out to you, then we'll hit the break, right?
Yeah.
You said, quote unquote, that Mike Gillislee is a fantasy perspective in a good matchup in a revenge game is a good fantasy play this week.
Yes.
You think Sam Bradford in a revenge game, not a great matchup, not a good play this week, right? That's what you said. But aren't you saying that because, one, fantasy-wise, running back is easier to play. There's a million quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. A starting running back in an offense that runs the ball is a good spot for Mike Gillislee, right?
And I might use Gillislee in DFS,
right,
too.
Right, because he's on a running team. On a running team, he'll be the obvious guy to run the ball, right? Mm-hmm. And you like Mike Gillislee because Miami has had trouble stopping the run, right?
Right.
What does that have to do with the revenge game?
What do you mean, what does it have to do with the revenge game?
It's all matchup-based, is what you're saying.
It's not all matchup-based.
Yeah,
I think he's going to have an extra emotional edge.
You just agree with everything I said.
I think he's going to have an... I'm agreeing with everything you said. I'm adding on top of it, extra emotional edge. Football's a game of emotion, and I think, you know, tangible-wise, that's going to spur him to a good performance. I think it's added on what we talk about on top of the matchup. It's an extra bonus to me.
Okay, let me throw this at you then. If Mike Gillislee, same situation, right? McCoy, let's say he's not playing this week, and Buffalo is... He's playing New Orleans.
Okay? Right.
They're playing New Orleans, which is, again, a fantastic matchup.
Yeah.
Right? Would you feel stronger or weaker in regards to Gillislee this week?
I'd feel strong about him.
Right.
But I'm just saying is that the way I originally threw it out, I said, and revenge game bonus. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I like Gillislee regardless, but it makes me even more confident to use him knowing that the revenge script is there.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, there's unfortunately a few more injuries to get to. There's injuries... And there's changes at quarterback, including Geno Smith officially being the head coach. Being the starting quarterback of the New York Jets, Joe Flacco does not practice. Neither does Odell Beckham. We'll talk about those and preview Thursday Night Football coming up next here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. We return here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Scott Engel, Adam Ronis, Greg Sussman with you. Ronis, how did you like not being part of the fight for once?
I was involved in a little bit.
Yeah, you came in.
But I was more in the
background
this time.
That's usually my role. You play in the background, you put in a few jabs. But how did you like standing outside the fight?
That's nice to watch from afar, just eat the popcorn.
Yeah, that's good. A couple more headlines here to get to. Joe Flacco didn't practice yesterday. He says he's going to be fine. John Harbaugh says, there's a good chance he plays this week. But it wasn't like, no big deal. Anything here to read, Ronis?
Not yet. Still kind of early in the week. It does sound like he's going to play. We'll see, though, the next couple days in practice.
We absolutely shall. Odell Beckham did not practice yesterday, Scott. He had the hit pointer. We knew, you know what? We knew this was an issue coming out of Sunday's game. Is there a concern, a long flight to London today? Is there a concern with Odell Beckham Jr.?
I don't know why a long flight would be a concern. It's not like he's going to be running around on the plane necessarily. We'll ask
because he gets stiff.
We'll ask Russ Salzburg about it when he comes on in the next hour. But okay. From everything that I've read, this is not something to be concerned about.
All righty. It's interesting because I've read a lot. You should be concerned about it. So that's interesting. Geno Smith, the new starting quarterback of the New York Jets. We assumed this yesterday. We assumed there's a good chance about this. We talked about it on Target. Scotty's laughing over
Start
here.
Start the Ravens defense.
Is that your takeaway here? Start the Ravens defense, Ronis?
Yeah, they've been pretty good anyway in general. And we know Geno Smith is prone to making mistakes. And came in last week. He threw an interception. He fumbled that. The Jets recovered it. So, yeah, I think the Ravens defense has been pretty good in general, especially against the run. Can make the Jets one-dimensional. And we know Smith is prone to making mistakes. So, yes, Ravens defense in play this week.
What about what this does to the Jets' offensive weapons, Scott? Brandon Marshall, Quincy Enunwa. How does this affect those guys?
Be interesting to see if he continues to go to Enunwa, who his favorite receiver is. But, you know, Brandon Marshall's Brandon Marshall. You know, he's played with some mediocre quarterbacks before. I'm not too concerned about it. I'm not saying I'm not be 100% concerned about it, but, you know, I continue to roll him out there every week. My lineup ranks on rotoexperts.com right now. Part of your exclusive edge in season fantasy football package on rotoexperts.com. Enter free radio checkout for a discount. I still have the number 6 at wide receiver this week.
Continuing on. Matt Forte, Bilal Powell. Do you see an uptick for perhaps? We have seen an uptick for Bilal Powell. Do you think that continues with Geno Smith at quarterback? Or not affected?
Probably because you gotta. If you think they're going to play from behind, it's going to be more Powell. He outsnapped them again last week. And, you know, Forte has really been hurt by the offensive ineptitude, them falling behind. And then it's resulting in more snaps for Powell. Last week it was 39-21, the snaps in favor of Powell. So. He's only averaging 14 touches the last four games. I think it's really difficult to start Forte right now. I get it. The running back landscape is atrocious, but Ravens have allowed the second fewest fantasy points to running back. They allowed 2 rushing touchdowns the first 2 weeks of the season. Nonsense. And they've held running backs to 64 yards rushing or fewer in 5 of 6 games. So Forte to me is in a bad spot. I wouldn't want to use him this week.
Let's talk about 2 players that did practice this week, Scotty. Stephon Diggs coming out of a bye did practice. No setback for him. He should be locked and ready to go. What do you think about Stephon Diggs in the second half of the year?
I think Diggs is the kind of game, you know, kind of guy where, you know, you'll have a big game 1 week, but you could always get a pretty good floor.
Okay. So you think he's a solid wide receiver 3
then?
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Jordan Reed, Ronis, also practiced yesterday a little bit. You know, he's still in the concussion protocol. Good to see him back on the field, though.
Yeah, this is a good sign. It still doesn't mean anything yet. We did learn that he hid the concussion from the team. He had it during the game, and he didn't say anything, which is a big problem for a guy that has had one. So you hope for his sake that he learns from this, and anytime there's a sign, he's got to say something because it could have been much worse. But it's a really good sign that he was on the field. Again, he hasn't been cleared yet, but it's better than him not being out there doing nothing at least.
Absolutely.
At least it shows that there's a glimmer of hope for him this week.
Absolutely.
Maybe he couldn't say anything.
What do you mean, maybe?
Maybe he wasn't about his wits well enough. to diagnose himself.
Thursday Night Football tonight, the Green Bay Packers at home against the Bears. The Packers are heavy favorites, and they have no running back, the Packers. They have no secondary. They're down to, I believe, their 4th and 5th corners, something like that. Sam Shields on
IR.
They're
missing the top 3, yeah.
Yeah, so down to their 4th and 5th corners starting. This is seems like a great spot, Scott Engel, for Alshon Jeffrey and Cameron Meredith.
Yeah, and even for Brian Hoyer, though. With Hoyer, I worry. Like, great matchup, down 3 corners. The backup corners come in and pick him off 3 times. So I'm definitely using Cameron Meredith. I'm also in Jeffrey. Zach Miller, I'm more confident in that. But, you know, who knows? It could be a 3-touchdown, 3-interception game. I don't trust Hoyer. And, you know, you got Cam off. You know, you got Roethlisberger. If you don't have one of them, you can consider using Hoyer for sure. But I actually saw him cut in 1 league last night.
Green, the big story, Ronis, this week was coming out of Sunday, was that Green Bay's offense was broken last year, and it's still very, very broken. They have no running game this week. This is a game that they're going to need to score points in, because I think their defense is going to allow quite a lot of points. What do you expect from Aaron Rodgers and company?
Yeah, I expect him to play okay tonight. You know, there's been a lot of criticism this week. It's a short week, so I think he's going to want to come out and prove people wrong. And there was some good analysis from Kurt Warner, and I think you should take it as a former quarterback. And he's just saying that Rodgers has lost trust in his wide receivers getting open. And then when he sees them open, he's a half second behind, and it's causing him to be off target. So I think this is a good matchup here. It's been a while since we've seen Rodgers get criticized. It's long overdue, and I think this is the week. This past week is when we saw it, really, for the first time. I thought a lot of people have been giving him a pass and not saying anything and letting him slide on reputation, and we finally saw a lot of it this week. So I think Rodgers is going to want to come out and have a big game. So I could see him producing, especially with them not being able to focus on the run too much with what they have. So I could see him have a good game. I like the matchup for these receivers. So
an interesting one point that you make, though, about the Kurt Warner analysis. I was reading some other analysis on ESPN that basically broke it down and saying, you know, kind of playing into what you said, Adam, about how, you know, a lot of, like, teams are, like, using pick plays and stuff like that to get their receivers open. The Packers haven't adjusted to that, and they're having those guys still run those straight routes, and they're not getting open.
Yeah, I think a big problem is the coaching, too. You know, they have done a horrible job, but, man, you know, over his last 16 regular season games, Aaron Rodgers has 6.26 yards per pass attempt. I mean, really, it's bad. I know we went over to fantasy numbers, and they're okay, but, man, from an NFL perspective, this guy has not played well.
That's why I do like Randall Cobb, if anything, because he's the one guy in that offense that can catch it, you know, on a flat or short pass and make something happen after the catch.
Now, my point, I wrote a little bit about this as well, the Green Bay offense.
On Sports Grid?
On SportsGrid.com, yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
You said you can't do your own bell.
Well, you talked me into that right. one. So, all right, that's deservedly so. I wrote a little bit about this. And, Ronis, you're right. The criticism is long overdue. We have blamed Eddie Lacy for being fat. We blame Jordy Nelson for not being healthy. We blame Randall Cobb for not being healthy. We blame the fact that it was not Mike McCarthy calling the plays. We blamed injuries on the defense. We blamed injuries on the offense. We have gone six levels deep without blaming Aaron Rodgers. We blamed everybody but Aaron Rodgers. And I think this Sunday, in a nationally televised game where you saw Randall Cobb open, you saw Jordy Nelson open, you saw Jeff Janis open, and Aaron Rodgers, and really exactly what you were saying, Kurt Warner said, a half second late. I have just a little bit too high or a little bit too low. And that was clearly on Aaron Rodgers. For the first time, I don't think people are ganging up on him, but they're rightfully pointing out that this isn't on Mike McCarthy or Randall Cobb. Jordy Nelson may be a step slow, but it's not on Jordy Nelson not being healthy. It's on Rodgers not making the plays. Tonight, Aaron Rodgers is going to need to make plays, in my opinion, to get the job done. He simply is going to have no choice but to keep up the scoring with the Bears and be the Aaron Rodgers of old. It's a tough spot for the Bears in Lambeau Field on a short week. It's a rivalry game, a division game, on a short week in a tough spot. But Aaron Rodgers cannot look how he looked on Sunday, or they're going to lose, Ronis.
Yeah, well, that you know, they play the Bears, so the Bears have been okay defensively. But, yeah, he's got to play better, and especially tonight, the ball is going to be in his hands more. They cannot rely on these running backs. Now, maybe we're surprised, and they hand it off early, and they have some success on the ground, but you got to think that this game is going to fall on the shoulders of Rodgers tonight, and it's a big spot for him. A lot of eyes are going to be on him, a lot of pressure, because he's starting to hear the criticism. So it's a big spot for Rodgers tonight, again, on the national stage, nationally televised game.
And one thing to remember is this is a divisional game, so we can't assume that there's going to be a high point total necessarily. This could end up being 20-17, too.
You think that's, but these, I don't think these defenses are good enough to make that happen.
When you have divisional games, sometimes, even though the defenses don't look good on paper, it'll be more lower scoring than expected because those guys know how to coach up against each other. I mean, the thing was San Diego played a divisional game last week, and everybody was, you know, calling for, I think, Denver to do really well against them, and San Diego played really well on a Thursday night. They were missing both their starting corners, and they played tremendous defense in a divisional game.
To be fair, though, we did say last Thursday, we sat in these exact seats, and we said San Diego has traditionally, under Mike McCoy, played Denver very well in low-scoring games. That's what we said.
And San Diego has played well this year. They've had some defensive collapses. We said going into that game, they led for the most minutes in the NFL this year.
Yeah, and but the one thing is, though, I've seen it over the years.
I agree. The divisional thing is absolutely true because teams are familiar with each other, and you get a lot of unexpected things that happen.
Yeah, I'm totally with you guys. I just expect I didn't say – I think it'll be a close game. I just think it will be
I'm just saying anybody thinking 34-31, I don't know you're going to get that.
Okay. And that's possible.
It wouldn't surprise me if it's like 10-7 at halftime.
You said you liked Zach Miller. You liked the wide receivers tonight here, Scotty. But I need to ask you about Kadeem Carey, who got quite a few snaps in favor of Jordan Howard, and John Fox has been adamant he's going to go with the hot hand. You're obviously not starting Kadeem Carey tonight. No question about that. But are you worried about him taking over a little too much from Jordan Howard?
I don't think so. I think Jordan Howard's earned a starting job. There was always talk in the preseason of a committee. I think they like Carey, and he's going to continue to have a role, but I think Howard is the lead guy. And that's not necessarily a bad thing because I don't think he's going to cut into his carries enough where it's going to be a 50-50 split. But then, you know, Howard remains flesh. People always look at the downside of a guy cutting into the carries. The upside is that Howard's going to remain fresh and he's not going to be overworked.
Ronis, as someone that may own Jordan Howard, if you own him, are you with Scott there that, like, you know what, I don't mind this guy making sure that my guy doesn't get overworked? Or are you saying, you know what, part of what I liked about Jordan Howard was the fact that he got every snap? Where do you stand on it?
He had 17 touches to 9 for carry. If your running back's getting 17, I don't understand how you could be upset. They're not going to give him 26 touches every single week. So the volume is still there. And I think carry is banged up, too. I know he was on the injury report with a hamstring.
He was limited.
So that, you know, he was that what he's injured with before, carry?
I think so.
All right, so maybe he's just not all the way back. Maybe they're just using it. Who knows? Surprised to see, by the way, Gronk off the injury report.
And Alshon Jeffrey.
And LeGarrette Blount. All these guys off the injury report this week. That was shocking.
I think Alshon Jeffrey's the biggest shock. He's been on it, like, basically for the last 2 years.
So is Gronk, though. Gronk's always on the injury report.
Well, the Patriots put everyone on the injury report.
That's why it's even crazier. I got to imagine Tom Brady will be on it for a shoulder, right?
Yeah, probably, for something.
He's got to be a shoulder injury. All right, let's talk to you right now at 844-843-6879, 844-843-6879. And we will start with John from Tampa. John, you are on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, fellas.
What's going on?
How you doing?
Hey, I just want to say I've enjoyed listening to the debate banter going back and forth the last couple of days with you guys.
Oh, thank you.
But, more entertaining than Trump and Hillary, and that's not easy.
Oh, never easy. Hey, a couple questions I have for you real quick.
Yep.
First question, I'm in a one-point PPR, and I got one flex spot open. I'm looking at Fitzgerald or Cobb. And then the second question is I have a precious bench spot being taken up right now by Thomas Rawls. Should I cut him and pick up maybe Rodgers? Or what are you guys thinking?
Oh, yeah, pick up Rodgers for now. I mean, Rawls, we have no idea when he's coming back. And right now, Michael is the guy. I don't see how you take Michael out of that lead role. So I would make that move for sure. And as far as for Cobb Fitzgerald, I like Cobb a little bit better. I think Fitzgerald will do okay in the slot against Seattle, but Palmer's playing like garbage. Again, Fitzgerald will give you the safe 10 points each and every single week, and I'm not really worried about him of all the receivers, but I really like Cobb tonight. I think he's going to get – we've seen 2 weeks in a row of double-digit targets, 11 targets. They're going to use him a little bit out of the backfield if he can break one big play. So I like Cobb better than Fitzgerald this week.
All right, and Scott, I mean, I know you follow the Seahawks. I mean, are you still feeling pretty comfortable starting Cobb over Fitzgerald, knowing that Fitzgerald's going up against a pretty good Seahawks defense?
I think, you know, like Adam said, you know, there's not a game where Sherman's going to follow Fitzgerald because they have other good receivers. Working in the slot is probably the easiest way to produce against that Seahawks defense. So I'm fine with Fitzgerald this week.
All right, let's go to David from Florida. David, you are on the Road to Experts in the Morning. What's going on?
Hey, guys. I have a question regarding the running back position. I have Todd Gurley going, and then I have to choose between Frank Gore or Jerick McKinnon. And if y'all pick one of them, then the other one's available in the flex spot, but my choice is Brandon Marshall, worried about, you know, the quarterback chain.
Play Marshall.
Ty Montgomery. Play Marshall. Okay.
Well,
and that's an easy one.
Well, oh, you have Montgomery in the flex too?
I do. I would have Montgomery, Marshall, or the running back you don't choose.
Well, yeah. Let's start with the running back, Ronis. McKinnon or Gore?
I like McKinnon.
Okay. So there's McKinnon. So then it becomes Gore, Scotty, to you. Gore, Marshall, or Montgomery?
I'm not benching Brandon Marshall.
I agree, man.
I agree also.
And when Geno was playing with him, the times he played, he targeted him a lot. So I think you stick with Marshall. He'll get the targets.
When we come back, we'll answer a few of your tweets and talk Survivor Week 7. We'll do it next.
Survivor.
Here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Did you say Roto Experts like 10 times in a row or something?
I'm grooving to this music, me and Ian.
You and Ian not ringing any bells here.
It's okay.
It's Roto Experts in the Morning, Sirius 210X. Oh, we're not Sirius 210 anymore. It's just the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, which you can listen to.
We are on Channel 1.
Which you can listen
to. The prime channel here, the only channel.
For free. So, you can listen to us for free on the app, on the website, on iTunes, wherever you want. Scotty, why don't we go through a few tweets here?
All right, our friend Christy Christian says, should I play Rudolph or Zach Miller, PPR?
Rudolph or Zach Miller, two good tight ends for this week. I think Rudolph has a tougher matchup. Zach Miller's a great matchup. What do you think, Ronis?
Yeah, Rudolph does have the tougher matchup, but they look for him a lot in the red zone, so I'm going to go with him. I know the Eagles have been really good against tight ends, but I'm still going to go Rudolph.
Yeah, I have this decision in one of my own leagues. I'm going to go Miller. Ed Barker said, our buddy Ed Barker.
Adam. Oh, yeah, that's
yes.
Right. What's up, Ed?
Yeah, fantasy executive, junior. Crazy to start Cam Meredith over Marvin Jones. Worried about Jones against Josh Norman.
Ronis?
So who is it, Jones or who?
Or Cam Meredith.
Oh, man. I don't know if Jones is going to get Norman all the time. I know his targets have gone down.
Meredith against that Green Bay defense, so tempting.
It is. At the same time, though, it's really tough to sit Marvin Jones, even in his down weeks.
I don't think I can do it. I would love to find a way to get both of them in there somehow.
Yeah, I don't think I could bench Marvin Jones. I don't think I could do it. Even though, I mean, Green Bay's so beat up, though. So beat up. I don't know.
I'm still going to go Jones.
Yeah, I would look for someone else to bench to get Meredith in. I think Meredith's a nice wide receiver, too, this week.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yep.
Barton Scotland. Says, I was offered straight-up trade Ty Montgomery for Jordan Matthews. I get Matthews.
Ty Montgomery for Jordan Matthews? I think you have to make this move. You have no idea how long Ty Montgomery's going to be fantasy relevant. I know Jordan Matthews has had his struggles, but I'll do that. I'll take Jordan Matthews for that.
Yeah, I would too.
All right, gentlemen, we'll get more of your tweets. Tweet us whatever you want, at FNTSYR Radio, at Scott E. Roto X, at Adam Ronos, at Greg Sussman. Guys, let's get into Survivor and Scotty's Power Rankings for week number 7. Scott, given that you have given us your rankings each and every week, you have survived every single week. Let's see if you can do it again.
I'm a survivor.
Let's see if that can continue.
Yeah.
We start tonight. The Packers are 7.5-point favorites at home against the Bears. What do you think?
I think the Packers like them so far. I'll have to go through the rest of the game.
Oh, they like them so far.
Brian Hoyer maybe giving good fantasy numbers, but he's not a winner. He's a journeyman. I think the Packers at least will be able to do enough to win this game.
Ronis.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the Bears won. I'll take the Packers, but I'm not going
to pick. I'm just doing Survivor. You don't have to pick them.
Yeah, I'm not picking them in Survivor.
So you're not picking Survivor. Well, and right now, you don't mind picking them in Survivor.
Yes, but I'll have to go through the games here.
Absolutely.
You know.
All right, the Giants are 3-point favorites over L.A., 9:30 in London. Is this a Survivor pick for you, Scott?
No, this game could go either way here. I think this may be a competitive but lower scoring game.
Ronis.
Yeah, I don't think it is a Survivor game either. I just think the Giants have been too erratic, too inconsistent to bank on them.
I agree. To me, this could be a low-scoring affair. Not that London games traditionally are. That's a myth. But I think these two teams, I don't know. I don't know what to expect here, so I'm out on this one as well. Kansas City, 6.5-point favorites at home against New Orleans. You consider this for Survivor?
Yeah, I would. I think Kansas City at home, tough place to play. We know the Saints struggle on the road. And they just match up well here against that defense. They can pound the football. And maybe we'll actually see Alex Smith throw a touchdown to Jeremy Maclin.
You consider this for Survivor, Scotty?
This week for daily play, Jeremy Maclin.
Yeah. He's going to be a good play because a lot of people were on him last week, and he had for 49. He only had three targets. They had a big lead, and they basically took the air out of the football. But because of that, people are going to stay away from him. Look, it's a good matchup. Sometimes you have to forget what happens and just go back. And I do think Macklin's an interesting
defense. Last week was a divisional game, too. This week it's not. So I would say Kansas City's probably my second favorite choice so
far. So you like Green Bay more than Kansas City?
I think Kansas City's good because I think they can be much more physical than New Orleans, especially on their own home turf.
Okay. The Titans are 2.5-point favorites at home against Indianapolis, Scott Angle.
Not a game I want to touch,
Ronis.
Necessarily.
Yeah, same here. I don't want to touch it.
Could come down to a field goal here.
All right. The Vikings are 2.5-point favorites in Philly. You consider this for Survivor?
No. Minnesota clearly is the better team, but on the road, you never really want to do that. So, and again, Philly's defense has played well. They're special teams, so they're capable of one big play could be the difference in this game in their favor. So I say no.
If Philly makes big plays, Adam's right. Wouldn't shock me to see the Eagles win this game. They would consider it a big emotional boost, especially at home.
Okay. Continuing on, gentlemen, Cincinnati is a 10-point favorite at home against Cleveland, Scott.
Yeah, probably my favorite so far. Green Bay second, Kansas City third.
Okay.
We don't know if we're going to have Terrell Pryor, although it looks like we may. I just think Cincinnati is clearly the better team here.
Yeah, this is a game that Cincinnati gets going. They've had a tough schedule here. They haven't been great this year. I think this is a game they get going. The Browns have been awful defensively. I think the Bengals' defense gets going here, too. Kessler's been sacked a lot. So, yeah, this is definitely the number one play.
Okay. The Lions at home against Washington, Scott?
Lions at home, not a Survivor game. No, but I expect the Lions to win.
We'll do the picks tomorrow, don't worry.
Yeah, nah, this is too evenly matched.
All right, Jacksonville is a favorite at home against the Raiders, Ronis.
Yeah, I'm not touching this game either. This could be a high-scoring affair. Over-under's 48.5, spread's close. Yeah, I'm not touching it.
No, but it's interesting to see how Jacksonville will operate the no-huddle against Oakland. They were down 13-0 the fourth quarter last week and then started running the no-huddle and all of a sudden scored 17, so... Yeah, let's see how much the no huddle they come out with here. It'd be interesting from a fantasy perspective.
Absolutely. Buffalo is in Miami in a Mike Gillisley revenge game, evidently. We're going to have a poll up on the Twitter. It's up and out, Ian? Yeah. So we have a poll up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. The poll is, do you think Mike Gillisley has a hashtag revenge game this week, hashtag fantasy poll? Yes, no, or revenge game isn't real? Scott says yes. I say no. You think 50% of you say, yes, he does. How about that?
The other 50 say no.
No, 26% say no. 25% say revenge games aren't real.
Right, so it's pretty much 50-50.
For now. We'll see what happens later on in the show. Yeah. Do you think Mike Gillisley and the Bills are a revenge game here? Survivor purposes only?
In terms of a Survivor game, no. Not fantasy game. Divisional game I don't want to touch.
Okay, Rob?
Yeah,
I don't either. It's a divisional game, and I know a lot of people are going to be on the Bills. They've played well, won four straight games, but nah, I can't use this in Survivor. Not a road team in a divisional game.
Alrighty. Buffalo. Baltimore in New York. It's the Ravens against Geno Smith, Ronis. Can I interest you?
Not as much as the other two. I could think about it. It's not like the Ravens have gone out there and dominated the competition. So
to be clear, you see the other two. For you, it's Cincinnati and Kansas City right now. Scotty, for you, it's Cincinnati and Green Bay right now.
Yeah.
Okay, just making it clear.
I don't feel great about this one.
I would say it's my fourth. You know, Baltimore played good enough defense against Geno Smith here.
Okay.
Mike Wallace, you know, against that second. Look. Considering Flacco plays.
Yes,
if it's Ryan Mallett, then I'm staying away.
Of course.
Yeah.
Okay. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are in San Francisco, Scott, facing Colin Kaepernick and perhaps no Carlos Hyde. What do you think of Tampa this week?
I don't like them, but it's not a Survivor game for me. I think San Francisco is actually going to win this
really?
Game. Yeah.
How come?
I just feel like, you know, on their home turf, Kaepernick's second start. I could see some turnovers from Tampa Bay. I just got a gut feeling that San Francisco is going to win this one, but it's not Survivor.
Survivor pick for you?
No, not touching it.
All right. So in the game of the week, I don't think you can touch this either. I'll talk more about this game tomorrow from a fantasy perspective. San Diego and Atlanta. I don't think anyone's touching this in Survivor, but it should be fun.
I think it's okay. I think you look at Atlanta and Survivor. Yeah.
Yeah, I think
you
so,
guys
too.
Are both, you guys both like Atlanta?
They're probably my fourth pick. Yeah.
Your fourth pick now, up to the fourth.
Yeah.
Are they for, you like them?
Three or four, yeah.
Okay, interesting. Do you like them better than Green Bay Runners?
Atlanta better than Green Bay? Yes.
Okay.
I don't think, it was good to see San Diego win last week.
Yep.
But I think Atlanta's got much more of a winning mentality than San Diego.
I don't know about winning mentality. Maybe they just have a better team.
They have a better team, and I think they know how to close where San Diego doesn't.
Just like they did last week?
Finally did it.
Atlanta did not close last week.
No, well, we can make a case that, they were right there. They were right there. You know what I'm saying? Against
They've played two very good teams. Four of the last five games on the road, including some tough environments.
I'm just saying, I'm buying a win mentality. It's not like a thing to me. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you don't believe in the intangibles like I do.
The Patriots don't have a winning
mentality? The Patriots, Bill Belichick has a winning mentality, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Atlanta has more of a winning mentality than San Diego.
All right. Patriots in Pittsburgh against Landry Jones.
Yeah, absolutely. This is in play. I'm sure a lot of people have used New England, but I'd put them near the top.
I'm going to say third, New England.
Okay.
I mean, I think Pittsburgh could pull a shocking upset this week.
The Seahawks and Cardinals, I don't think anyone's taking. Is that, can I say that or no?
No, I'm not touching it.
That game could go either way.
And then Denver at home against Houston on Monday Night Football. Scott Engel.
I like this. This would probably slot in now as my fourth.
All right. You went through every game. Give me your number one
Brock
Cincinnati.
Osweiler, no revenge game.
How is that a revenge game?
See, that's the problem with the revenge narrative. You're picking and choosing your spots. Why isn't this? This is a team that groomed him and let him go and didn't want to sign him the money.
He's facing the best defense in the league.
Okay, so then there's no revenge game. So this matchup. That's the problem. This is, you're going based on matchup.
What I
you're
said
picking
was,
and choosing.
What I said was, though, with Gillislee, it's an extra edge. But you're a numbers guy. You don't buy into intangibles. I'm not sure.
I do, but you're picking and choosing your spots.
We're
going to
talk more about this when we come back.
Based on intangibles.
Road Rushers in the Morning rolls on after this.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your host, Greg Sussman. Adam Ronis and Scott Engel is on now.
Hour number two underway here. Little Rushers in the Morning. Adam Ronis, Scott Engel, Greg Sussman with you for another hour. Fantasy BFFs coming your way next. Adam sticks around and I talk to Nando and Jake. And I need to get back into this revenge game narrative because I feel like one of us are picking and choosing when the revenge game applies, and the other one
you have to
aren't.
Pick and choose.
How could you do
it's
that?
It's not.
You guys are looking at it in like a logical sort of lens. You can't apply that sort of logic to when you're looking at intangibles. It's being driven by emotion.
So okay, you're telling
what
me.
What I originally said was that I like Gillislee to begin with. I said the revenge script just makes me a little bit more confident about it.
Okay, if you're going to use the revenge narrative, I don't see how it doesn't apply to Brock Osweiler. You're talking intangibles
and
emotions.
He has a terrible matchup.
Okay, so then that's matchup analysis.
I already admitted that.
So you're.
I didn't say it's only matchup based. Listen to my statement again.
Listen to us. Don't yell at us about us not listening when you don't listen to anything.
Don't make
we say.
It personal.
I'm
okay?
not making it personal.
Don't make it personal.
How is this personal, Scott? What did
All
I
right?
say? Did
listen
I insult you?
Listen to what
you?
I'm saying now.
Did I insult you?
Listen to what I'm
okay,
saying
go
now.
Ahead. Go ahead.
Listen to what I'm saying right now. Forget everything else. Okay.
okay? Go ahead.
Because I've said it a few times, and obviously you haven't listened.
And
today.
You haven't listened when
okay?
I responded
you
back.
You haven't listened today, okay?
okay.
Because
whatever.
I said I like Gillislee regardless. I said putting the revenge game just puts
what
a cherry
if, what
on top of it.
What if Gillislee doesn't start? What if McCoy plays?
Then why would I call a revenge game? The guy's not going to play. So what are you asking me?
So what about Osweiler? Why is he not a revenge game? This is a guy that the team didn't sign him.
If you put it from an NFL perspective, you could say it's a revenge game. So if I have to break it down for you again like I did for Greg last hour, this is not a revenge game for fantasy. But you're a numbers guy. If you can't read it off of a sheet,
that's
you probably don't believe it.
Why? So you're insulting me now, right?
What?
You're insulting me?
No, not personal.
Okay, then you said it was personal before. What did I say that insulted you personally?
I didn't say anything personal. I just talk about your analysis.
Okay.
I didn't say anything about your hair or nothing, or your face or nothing like that. It's not personal.
You see what he's doing now?
Why did he do that to you?
First of all, I do take tangible into effect. But you, again, like Greg was saying too, you're picking and choosing spots. If it's either
you have to.
Why do you have to? Then
some guys are not capable of exacting the revenge because of their skill level in the matchup.
So that means that you get to cherry pick whatever you want just to
I'm
fit
not
the
cherry
story.
Picking. Yeah, I'm not just picking it out of the air, okay?
Well, I think
you said emotion is a big factor. Shouldn't Brock Osweiler be emotional?
Against the Denver Broncos?
So what? So now all your analysis right now is based on matchups. You're saying Miami's a good matchup.
What I said is, all right, let me try to explain it this way. I like Mike Gillisley because of a matchup. Because of the revenge game script, it becomes matchup plus for me.
Fine. I think all I'm looking for you to say, and maybe Adam as well, I don't want to speak for him. I want you to say that this is a revenge game for Brock Osweiler. You think because of the matchup, he's going to suck at it, and that's fine, but this is a revenge game. Is that fair?
From an NFL perspective, yes. From fantasy, no.
Well, in effect, it's the same thing. It's a revenge game for both. Even if the matchup's terrible, it's still a revenge game.
Like I always say, not everything in fantasy is absolute. You just can't sweep it with a broad brush. Brock Osweiler is not capable of exacting his will in this revenge game this week.
Absolutely agree with that. I'm sure Adam does also. Right. But it's still a revenge game.
From an NFL perspective, it's not a fantasy revenge game. It's not something – a fantasy revenge game – to me,
right.
is you're looking from an NFL perspective, you're right.
Right.
It is a revenge game.
Right.
But for the fantasy revenge game, to me, that what it is I will consider this starting this guy or I will like the matchup better because of the revenge script.
If you were ranking emotional revenge based on what happened to these players, wouldn't Bradford and Osweiler be way above Gillisley?
Yeah, but I just said from an NFL perspective, that's true. But from a fantasy perspective, I can't start Bradford, and I can't start Osweiler. So it's a revenge game from an NFL perspective, but not a fantasy consideration.
But if it's a revenge game from an NFL perspective, wouldn't the numbers translate to into the game?
It's a revenge game where a beat reporter is going to write about it. You know what I'm saying? It's not where I think the guy can produce good numbers.
Okay. Again, I just – it's your –
I'm picking for reasons. I'm not just picking out of the air.
Okay. A lot of the times, though, these fail, though. It's, you know.
There's been times it's worked, too.
Yeah, but a lot of times it fails, too.
Well, we're not always right on everything. So there's a lot of times when we have a good matchup and a guy looks good and we're not even talking about this, we don't get it right. So
yeah, Delanie Walker last week. He was a great play. It didn't work
out.
Exactly. But again, it's the analysis that goes into it. When you're talking revenge game, it's a lot of emotion, and then there's got to be emotion for Sam Bradford and Brock Osweiler, and that's
being
dismissed.
But they can't impose their will.
Why
it's
can't
a bad
Bradford?
Matchup.
Why can't Bradford?
I don't think his fantasy numbers haven't been great, and he's got a tough matchup.
But don't you think that
I think it's going to be a low scoring game?
Okay,
I think it's going to be a defensive battle.
I mean, the Eagles have given up 5 touchdown passes.
Look,
the last 2 weeks.
Could be wrong on it, but my prediction is that I don't think he's going to have that good of a game.
All right, I think Gillisley will have a good game, not because of revenge, because if he gets in there and McCoy is injured, he's going to get a ton of carries.
Oh, I agree
and
with
the
you.
Dolphins are susceptible
but
against the run.
I'm just saying I call it matchup plus. I agree with you that it's a good matchup, but I'm just saying the revenge script, this guy was released by the Dolphins. I think that had something for me.
All right. I mean, again, Bradford was traded right at the beginning of the year.
But again, Bradford, to me, is not capable of having a good statistical performance this week. And he's not somebody I'm going to remotely consider starting.
Well, you wouldn't consider starting Gillisley, though, most weeks, right?
Obviously, we're talking about if he starts.
Right.
So I don't.
But it's based on the matchup.
You're saying you're not
so
Gillisley, starting Gillisley
okay,
most
say
weeks.
Gillisley was cut by the Vikings, and he started this week against the Vikings.
I wouldn't like it.
So based
again,
on the matchup,
again,
right?
What I said was matchup plus.
So what is it, 80% matchup, 20% emotional?
I'm not going to assign a number to it because, you know, it's a tangible, it's not emotion. I'm saying I like Gillisley. The fact that he has the revenge game strip, it makes me like him. It just gives me more confidence and makes me feel more comfortable about pressing that activate button.
Okay.
I'm going to pause this debate and play a little name that player. How's that? So calm things down. have a little fun, play a game, relax a little bit. Cool?
We played a game yesterday and we were screaming.
Well, that was a debate. That was an actual debate. This is just named that player. All right. Let's do it. Here we go. Ian, can I get some music here, perhaps, to into the background a little bit? Get me pumped up. Everyone knows how we play. I give a bunch of clues. It is on Ronis and Scotty to guess. If you get it first, let us know. At FNTSY Radio, Ian will alert us that you have beaten the experts, Ronis and Angle.
Before we start, though, here's an interesting question about what we're talking about on Twitter. Christian Blyer says, don't the Broncos have the side of revenge on stopping Osweiler based on what he did?
I would think they do, yeah.
I guess you could look at that.
I think they do, absolutely, sure. Yeah.
But I think they're going to be able to stop him regardless.
Alrighty. Let's do it. Here's the first one. I was drafted in 2012.
That narrows it down.
I have been active for two NFL teams, despite signing with several others. I have already achieved my career high in receptions with 33. Remember, if you know the answer before these guys, tweet at us at FNTSY Radio. I have already achieved my career high in receiving touchdowns with 3.
It is. Okay.
I am currently in the top 10 in scoring at my position. 33 receptions this year, 3 touchdowns. In the top 10 at his position.
Seth Roberts.
Scoring. It is not the architect, Seth Roberts. Do you think Seth Roberts is in the top 10 as a wide receiver?
Yeah.
that's probably not a good look there. Yeah.
Terrell Pryor.
It is Terrell Pryor. That's correct. The other clues were, I have senior in my name. I attended the Ohio State University. I am a former supplemental round draft pick. And there's a couple other ones. But yeah, Terrell Pryor, a little banged up right now. What's his outlook the rest of the way?
It's got to be good, man, if he's healthy. He's really impressed. You know, he's really developed into a wide receiver, former quarterback. He's kind of been force-fed into that number one role because Corey Coleman out, obviously the Josh Gordon thing. But, man, Pryor's been impressive. So, yeah, I think you're feeling good about him the rest of the way.
All right. You like Terrell Pryor as well, Scotty?
Yeah, wide receiver 3 the rest of the way. I was wrong on him.
All right, let's continue on. I am a former first-round draft pick.
All right, that's about 800 players. Go ahead.
Yeah,
this is my 7th NFL season. Narrows down for you.
All right, it does.
I am currently on my 2nd NFL team. I missed 1 full season of my career due to injury. I feel like Ronis is like on the tip of his tongue here.
No.
Okay. In 2015, that's last year, I caught my career high in passes, although I didn't have a career high in yards.
Golden Tate?
It is not Golden Tate.
Yeah, he was a 3rd-round pick, I think.
I have caught double-digit touchdowns twice in my career, which is also the only 2 times I played 16 games in a season. When I said I caught my career high in passes, that number was 87 receptions. That came, again, last year. However, despite the 87 receptions last year, I did not have double-digit touchdowns.
Michael Crabtree?
It is not Michael Crabtree. I was the cause for my team to lose the draft pick due to tampering.
Brandon Marshall?
It is not Brandon Marshall. That was my favorite clue of the day, by the way. I was the cause for my team to lose the draft pick due to tampering. This year, I have just 1 touchdown and 23 receptions. You can beat Adam and Scott. Tweet at us at FNTSY Radio. Ian will give you a shout out on the air. 87 receptions last year, He scored double-digit touchdowns twice in his career.
Jeremy Maclin.
Yeah.
The next clue is going to be, despite playing on two different teams, I've only played for two different coaches. I'm an alumnus of the University of Missouri. Nice job with Jeremy Maclin. One touchdown, 23 receptions this year. What's your outlook on Jeremy Maclin, Scott?
Going to be inconsistent the rest of the way, but I like him this week.
I think he'll be better. He's too good of a receiver. Obviously, he gets hurt by the lack of aggressiveness in this offense. And, again, he's just provided a nice floor most weeks. I think it'll get better for Maclin. He's too good.
What are you laughing at, Ian? Ian's sitting here laughing.
Just Tate McDonald first tweeted Howard Bay, and then he tweeted Hayward Bay.
Yes, it's not Howard Bay. It's Hayward Bay. Yeah. That's not correct. All right.
Is that Cha-Cha?
It is tied 1-1, which means we need a tiebreaker. Are you gentlemen ready?
Yep.
Here we go. I'm a former undrafted free agent.
Doug Baldwin.
It is not Doug Baldwin. Imagine it was, though. I'd be annoyed at you.
Arian Foster.
It is not Arian Foster. Imagine it was, though. I'd be annoyed at you. I am currently on my third NFL team in my fourth NFL season. I had a career high in receptions last year with 75, along with 5 touchdowns, with 944 yards receiving. I am an alumnus of the University of Central Florida.
Oh, man.
John Brown?
No. It is not.
Oh, my God. John Who Brown. Is this? I know this.
Despite being pre-ranked in Yahoo as the 110th best player, I am currently number 337 in the half-point PPR. Tweeted us at FNTSY Radio if you have a response you want to beat. You want to beat Adam and Scott. Continuing on. After 75 receptions last year, I have just 10 this year and 92 total yards receiving.
Damn, I know who this is, man.
I have, despite being on my third NFL team, I have only caught passes with one team. Greg clearly liked me way too much this offseason. And because he liked him so much this offseason, he picked him up again this week.
Kamar Aiken.
It is Kamar Aiken.
Damn it, man. I was like... The Central Florida thing was bothering me. I'm like, I know who this is.
It is Kamar Aiken. I picked up. It was a nice job. His brother Clay is a former cast member of The Celebrity Apprentice. Why does Joe Flacco hate me? Kamar Aiken this week. Steve Smith, I assume, is going to be out again against the Jets. They do a bye next week. Kamar Aiken certainly picked up the pace in his absence. What do you think of Kamar Aiken this week?
Yeah, look, I think he gives you a nice floor in a PPR. We know the Jets have been awful defensively. Flacco did take more shots deep. That's really not Aiken's game, but it could open up maybe some of the underneath. I think if you're looking for a receiver to plug in this week, sure. Aiken gave you 10 in a PPR last week. I think you'd do that again.
Are you in this week, Scott Engel, on Kamar Aiken?
I like him as a good bye week filler this week. Matchup is good.
Matchup is good. Bye week filler is good. Situation is good.
Opportunity's there, and he's proved it before.
Probably his last week of fantasy relevance, but it's okay. Maybe.
Could be, yeah. We'll see. Steve Smith is 37. Let's not forget.
Steve Smith is, in fact, 37 years old. All right. We'll take a break now. When we come back, we hope to be joined by Russ Salzberg. Talk a little Giants and Jets with Russ. We do it next, right here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Here on the Roto Experts in the Morning, Greg Sussman, Scott Scott Engel, Adam Ronis, taking you up until 10 a.m. Eastern Time with the Fantasy Best Friends Forever. Coming up right now, we welcome in Russ Salzberg, pregame host for the New York Football Giants, who face the Rams in London this weekend. Good morning, Russ.
Good morning, Greg. How you doing?
I'm doing really, really well. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me. Looking forward to chatting.
Absolutely. And I want to start here, Russ, with probably the biggest story surrounding the Giants, this morning at least, and that's what's going on with Josh Brown. And Josh Brown, I believe it was SNY, found documents that were in police records that basically were journal entries from Josh Brown and letters to his kids, to his wife, where he compared himself to a god and his wife to a slave. How is Josh Brown still employed by the New York Giants, Russ?
Well, I think it caught everybody, Greg, by surprise. Certainly when I heard about it, it caught me by surprise. And I think the question is now what they're going to do. And when I say caught everybody by surprise, listen, I was there yesterday after practice, and, you know, everybody's talking to, you know, Ben McAdoo about, you know, Odell Beckham and, you know, his hit pointer and what's going on. So nobody knew about this as they're getting prepared to go on a, transatlantic flight.
Yep.
For a game in London. Having said that, you know, so then we wake up to this, or we hear about it last night. A couple of things. My thoughts are somebody's going to have to answer some questions. That's quite apparent. The thing about it is when I started reading everything, I don't know if I should use the word shock. I wasn't shocked by it because we know that there was a domestic abuse problem.
Mm-hmm.
When we read further into his comments in the journal, that journal was part of his agreement for treatment.
Yep.
So that was part of what was going on. The question is, I think that people want answered or have to be answered. If this was the case, why isn't he suspended for six games, or why was it just one game? And that's the question that's coming up. Well, we knew about the alleged, or not alleged, we knew about the domestic abuse because that was out there. It's just a matter of to the extent of it.
Russ, good morning.
So I really don't know. Good morning.
Go ahead.
Continue.
No, I'm sorry. I really don't know at this juncture what they're going to do. I don't think anything is going to be done before this week because there will be further comments on it. It's an ongoing situation. I think the biggest problem that the National Football League has, as well as all professional sports, is that the public wants rules for the leagues as opposed to what the judicial system has. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not condoning any of this. Listen, I have two daughters, okay?
Right.
Both are married daughters and are mothers.
Yep.
But the judicial system, it was the same thing, you know, with the Ravens. The judicial system allows for certain situations to call it loopholes or what, but the public opinion does not want the leagues to allow the same situation. You know, they want the leagues to be the judge and jury as opposed to the judicial system. So it's a very awkward situation.
It's an awkward situation, I agree. But after the Ray Rice situation, which you brought up with Baltimore, the league came out with this grand domestic violence policy where a first-time offender will be suspended for six games. We are 2 years past this policy being enacted. Not a single player that has had a domestic violence dispute, Josh Brown included, has been suspended six games. The NFL's not even backing their own policy.
Well, I mean, that it has become the issue. The issue is, how is the policy enforced? I'm not disputing that with you.
Yep.
The question is, how is the policy enforced? And I think part of the mistake, Greg, is this. I think every situation has to be looked at on an individual basis, not a blanket statement. Now, I don't want anybody saying, well, wait a minute, is Russ allowing for domestic abuse? No, not at all. I'm dead set against it. But you understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
I think every situation needs to be looked at individually. I'll give you a similar example. Let's go back to Plaxico Burress,
mm-hmm.
you know, with holding on to, you know, having a gun.
Yep.
What was his intent? Wasn't his intent to go into a club and menace people? Was his intent to go in to a bodega and rob it?
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Every situation has to be looked at differently. That's all I'm saying. And I think that's where the league has gotten himself into a problem, because when you make a blanket, you know, zero tolerance or some kind of situation where, no, automatically first-time offender this, automatically second-time offender that, it's, you know, it's not the same as first-time offender violating the drug policy, second-time violating a drug policy, third-time. There are different degrees of penalties.
Morning, Russ. And you said that you were at practice yesterday, and they were talking about Odell Beckham's hip. He didn't practice yesterday. How much is this a concern, you know, heading into the game in London? And after what we saw from Odell last week, which is the dramatic finish and all the passing yards from Eli Manning, does this mean that the Giants' passing game is back and here to stay, or are we going to see a lot more ups and downs?
Well, I think I'll be surprised, Scott, if Odell doesn't play. I think, you know, they did their due diligence keeping him out yesterday, giving him treatment. I think they'll see how he does today. You know, it's kind of interesting to me because, you know, a 7-hour flight? Long flight with a bad hip, you know, sitting around, I would imagine that's not the best case scenario. It's like if you have a bad back. You know, that said, I think, listen, the passing game you knew was going to get better. Now, as well as Odell did last week, they still want to make sure everybody else is involved, i.e. Victor Cruz, i.e. Sterling Shepard, i.e. Larry Donnell. So I think those situations have to be improved upon, and they have to get their running game intact. But I would – listen, everybody knew that the Giants' air attack was going to be a good one this year, barring injury. I mean, Victor Cruz is healthy. Sterling Shepard is going to be a star in the league, and you know what Odell Beckham Jr. is. So I would think that their passing attack will, you know, continue to improve, of course, barring injury. But they got to get the running game going, because if the running game going, that's going to make the passing attack that much more potent.
What is the answer to the running game? We saw Rashad Jennings last year over the last four when they finally went away from that four-back committee. He produced, but he's been banged up. He came back last week, didn't do nothing. I understand it was a tough matchup against the Ravens. But what is the solution to the running game?
Well, I think you hit the nail right on the head. I think part of the problem has very much been the inconsistent play of their offensive line. You know, you got to open up holes. If you don't open up holes, the running game has not been going. It doesn't get going. And let's be quite honest, I think part of the Giants' success last week with the passing game, Eli was being very quick. They were getting up to the line quick. You know, they weren't taking their time. I think part of the reason that Eli Manning had quick feet early on in particular in the previous two games against the Pack and the Vikings, was his bad play of the offensive line, even with pass protection. You know, Eric Flowers, you know, your top pick 2 years ago, has been a disappointment. I don't want to say that he's regressed, because the season is still young. You're not at the midway point yet, but it's a young offensive line, and that offensive line needs to improve all the way around, both with the pass protection and its opening up gaps. And until that consistency comes through, you're going to have your problems. But I think the running game, to me, has to get better. If it doesn't, they're going to have some problems.
Have you been impressed, Russ, with the job that Ben McAdoo has done as the head coach? Obviously, going from an offensive coordinator where you're focusing on just your job of calling plays is one thing. But then keeping that job and then taking on all the responsibilities of being the head coach is a lot. And that has caused McAdoo to come under fire a little bit with the Giants media, with the fans. There's some questionable decisions with the play calling. There's some questionable moves where he didn't challenge the play a couple weeks ago against Green Bay when it was the same result as a timeout. So his ability to be an effective head coach has certainly come under fire as of late. What do you think of the job Ben McAdoo has done as head coach the first 6 weeks of this season?
Look, he's following a guy, and I'm not – listen, I'm with the Giants every week. I do the post game show. I do the pre game shows. It's not. I've been covering him for a lot of years.
Yep.
I consider his predecessor Tom Coughlin a good friend.
Yep.
following Tom, you're following a guy who was a two-time Super Bowl winning head coach. That said, you know, the media and the fans are extremely, extremely fickle, and you guys know that. They wanted Tom Coughlin out. Towards the end of the season, fans and media, it's time to make a change. It's time to make a change. Now I'm reading earlier in this season, you know what? Maybe they ought to bring Tom back to mentor Ben McAdoo. You can't have it both ways. He's a new head coach. I think the biggest problem that he's had is that when you do not execute, guys, when you don't execute, I don't want to talk coach talk now, but it really is that simple. If you don't execute, everybody looks bad. You know, they're talking about, I don't want to digress from your question, but, you know, Odell Beckham Jr.
Sure.
Is Odell Beckham Jr. a distraction? You know what? If they were 4-1 going into last week instead of 2-3, there would be no talk about a distraction. When you win, you know, the receivers coach, Adam Henry, was asked about Odell Beckham Jr. last week. He came out with the greatest line, and a bunch of us looked at one another and said, geez, I never heard that before, but it was really fun. He said, nothing that a little vitamin W won't help everybody.
We're talking
vitamin
about
W is a win. That's it.
Absolutely.
If you win, nothing else counts.
Absolutely. We're talking to Russ Salzberg. He is the pre- and post-game host for the New York Giants, spending a couple minutes here with us. I want to take a break from the Giants, though, for a second and go to the Jets, who effectively this week replaced Ryan Fitzpatrick with Geno Smith. And the Jets see four quarterbacks on their roster, which I believe somebody said yesterday that if you have four quarterbacks, you probably don't have any quarterbacks on your team. And I think that's probably effective. After Jets fans begged to have Ryan Fitzpatrick back, what are the Jets doing dragging their feet? Just give them the money. Give them the money. Give him the money. Well, they gave him $12 million and have benched him after 6 weeks. Now, Geno Smith comes in. He's a free agent in his own right this year. What are the Jets doing right now, Russ?
Well, it's a worst-case scenario. It's not so much that they lost, you know, or their record is 1-5. Look, guys, I'll be frank with you. When I looked at their first six games, let's be honest, I haven't looked at everybody's schedule in the league. But their first six games, that was a killer schedule, an absolute killer schedule. When I looked at the schedule, in fact, I got it in front of me now, of their six games, they beat the Bills. I expected them at best to be 2-4. So they're 1-5. The record doesn't bother me as much because, listen, you don't want your football team to be 1-5. You know, no Jets fan wants his team to be 1-5. Having said that, their situation is not that they lost, but it's how they lost. Their quarterback play has been awful, but there are other issues. Their running game has been lousy. Their tight end play has been lousy. Now you have Eric Decker out. I mean, they're looking to find a solution, and I don't think they have the solution. Listen, you can mark it down that I'm saying on this date, Geno Smith is not going to be the solution. But with the quarterback play being as bad as it was, he has to try something. I mean, you can't continue. Listen, go back to his last game from last season where he threw three interceptions with money on the table, and he's thrown 11. So basically in his last, seven games, he's thrown 14 interceptions. You know, Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, they had to make some kind of a change. The problem is, what good is the change if the change doesn't help? But they had to do something. Geno Smith is not going to be the answer. And I think they're hoping, you know, that, quite frankly, Petty will be the answer. But Petty's been hurt for 2 months. So now we'll have to wait and see. But listen, if Geno's being put in, they can't yank him after a game unless he has a complete disaster. I think the problem with Geno is he going to command the respect of his teammates?
Do you think this change affects Brandon Marshall all adversely, and are we going to see Geno Smith continue to get the ball to Quincy Enunwa?
Well, I'll tell you what, Scott, I think you hit the nail on the head, especially for all your fantasy players. I think Brandon Marshall is really affected in a very adverse way. I mean, how could he possibly not be affected. As I just mentioned, they don't have a running game. Decker is out, and their tight end play is lousy. I mean, the weapons have been taken away, so the focus is going to be on keeping Brandon Marshall under control. If they focus on Brandon Marshall because they're allowed to, because they don't have to worry the defenses about what else is coming at them. I mean, Brandon Marshall's numbers to me have to go down. I can't see him not being affected. I think their offense is in dire straits.
Do you see Geno Smith finishing the year as the quarterback for this team?
You know, for Jet fans' sake, I hope he does, but no, I don't see that happening. I think their situation is, look, they're going to have to be playing the Patriots a couple of times. They have their division games coming up, their defense would have to absolutely play off the charts. Their defense would have to be play like the 85 Bears defense for them to, you know, salvage this season. And I just don't see that happening. So I really think, in answer to your question, I'll be surprised if Geno is a starting guy at the end of the season. Now, where do we go from there? Do you go with Ryan Fitzpatrick to come back? Or do you try, you know, Pettier, Hackenberg, simply because you got to start thinking about the future, because Ryan Fitzpatrick is certainly not the future. And we knew that going into this season. If anybody, it's the reason why they didn't want to give Ryan Fitzpatrick a 3-year contract. You know, and that was the right move from a business standpoint, because let's be frank, going into last season, great guy, wonderful person, you know, bright, Harvard, all that business, but he's a journeyman quarterback who had a career year last season.
Absolutely. He has been on, I believe, 6 NFL teams. He has started for, one shy of the NFL record. Russ, for our fantasy players out here, Matt Forte got off to an unbelievably hot start, and we all were counting on him. He's going to be great. And you pointed out the Jets' schedule, how brutal it's been. Do you think Matt Forte will be more like the player we saw the first couple weeks, or more like the player we've seen the last few once the schedule eases up a bit?
Well, that kind of goes into what we were just talking about, Greg. You have a situation of, you know, now the hip bone's connected to the knee bone. The knee, you know that also? Well, let's look at the situation. Decker being out is enormous. Your tight end play has been lousy. You have now a new quarterback coming in. So it's all, to me, Forte has to get better. If he does, well, then it's better for Brandon Marshall. But if he doesn't, or Brandon Marshall doesn't pick it up and try to carry things on his shoulders, which is always, once a player starts doing that, then it becomes dangerous, because, listen, no receiver can carry anything on his shoulders unless the quarterback is getting him the ball. So, you know, from a Forte standpoint, I'm really surprised about the way he's looked the past few games. But then again, if you're falling behind, you know, your running game, I don't have to tell anybody that, you know, especially, you know, fantasy players. If you fall in a big hole, you're not going to get the ball to run with. You're going to end up throwing the ball. You know, who knows? Maybe Geno Smith is going to pile up yards because the Jets are going to fall in a big hole and they're going to be playing catch up all the time. So they're going to come out and do nothing but throwing the ball for garbage time.
So you mentioned, you know, how bad the offense looks, but, you know, as the Jets try to play this out effectively for the rest of the year, Russ, you know, somebody's got to step forward, especially if Marshall's getting double covered. Are we going to see maybe one or two of these young receivers, you know, give us decent production, give Jets fans hope for the future, give us some decent fantasy numbers, and also, you know, will we see anything from Austin Seferian Jenkins?
You know, when guys go down, that's always a chance for somebody to, you know, come up and, you know, grab the bull by the horns. You know, make the most of opportunity. And, you know, that to me is what they need to do here. But having said that, you know, from a fantasy standpoint, you're going into the unknown. I mean, how do you go to the bank with question marks? And that's what the you know, Jets have right now is question marks. I think it's like anybody's situation. You get a chance to play. Look, that's what happened to Victor Cruz with the Giants years ago when he first came into the league. He was an undrafted free agent. Some guys went down. All of a sudden, he gets a chance to play, and he becomes a star player. So you never know. But then again, you have a young guy, young receivers, and now you have Geno Smith. You know, it's not like you have a sharpshooter. It's not a Aroldis Chapman coming out of the bullpen throwing bullets.
Final question final question here, Russ. Is Darrelle Revis done?
Well, done is unfair. But when you make a comparison, is Darrelle Revis what he was? I think, no, that I don't think is the case. Okay. I think Darrelle Revis suffers from a lot of us suffer. We're not the same as we were X amount of years ago. I think Darrelle Revis can still play, but you got to remember something. This is a wide receivers league.
Yep.
You guys know that.
Yep.
It's the wide receiver is the diva position in the National Football League. It is the glamour position. And you got a lot of good young ones out there now. And, you know, Revis is going to be challenged on a weekly basis. I don't think he's done. I mean, to say that he's done means the guy needs to hang him up. I mean, if you want to compare him, to a lot of teams in the National Football League would like Darrelle Revis. I don't know if they would like him at his price tag, but they would like him. So to say that he's done, I think that would be an unfair assessment.
Okay, Russ Salisbury, you can watch him, Giants pre and post game. You can see him on Fox 5 here in New York as well. Russ, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure. Anytime.
We appreciate it. When we come back, we will talk some baseball from last night, preview baseball from tonight. We'll get to more of your tweets, answer more of your phone calls at 844-843-6879, 844-843-6879. The Roto Experts of the Morning wrap up right after this. It is the final 14 minutes of the Roto Experts in the Morning. Scott Angle, Adam Ronis, Greg Sussman wrapping things up with you. Fantasy BFFs, the best friends forever, is up next. Ronis sticks around, hangs out with Nando and Jake. Should be a good one. For that, you don't want to miss it. Scott, you'll be back. Old School Fantasy with George Kurtz. An appearance by Cha-Cha later on. I'll be back here for On Target coming up at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Guys, the Cleveland Indians are headed to the World Series for the first time since 1997. They're actually there in 95 and 97. Did not walk away with the title. They will look to win the title for the first time in close to 70 years here. This next week, when the World Series begins, it's the first time they ever have had home field advantage in the World Series. Cleveland wins the series 4-1, 3-0 victory yesterday. Ryan Merritt pitched fantastically. I actually thought he came out too early, but this is what we expected, right? Get for four. Brian Shaw comes in. You'll see Andrew Miller on the sixth. It took him like 20 pitches to get through three innings. And Cody Allen bared down and really got the job done in the ninth. The Indians and their fantastic bullpen are headed to the World Series, Scott.
Yeah, but it's almost like nobody talks about the hitting, although the hitting didn't come up too big in this series. But, you know, it was timely, you know, when there was the hitting for the rookie to come in and, you know, pitch like he did. And they turn over to the bullpen. You know, they have a terrific formula. You know, it's been about bullpens. You know, we saw the Royals, you know, win the World Series. It's good they had terrific back end of the bullpen, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if Andrew Miller wasn't the MVP, Ronis, I probably I would have selected Francisco Lindor probably. I thought he had a good series both in the field and at bat. Lindor made some fantastic plays yesterday that kind of highlighted that. And the Indians now will rest. They'll get Corey Kluber in game one on regular rest, which will be great. And this should be a fun World Series no matter who they face.
Yeah, they were impressive in this postseason. It's a hell of a run for them. I mean, this team shut down the Red Sox and the Blue Jays, two of the best offensive teams in baseball, and they made them look pretty bad. I mean, Blue Jays could just never get any thing going. They got just enough starting pitching, and then they turned it over to Andrew Miller. It's just dominant. It was a phenomenal trade for them. You know, they did have to give up a top prospect, but you know what? They're not going to care what Clint Frazier does if they win the World Series this year.
It means nothing.
And they got there, and that's the bottom line. It's a move they had to make, and it's really changed the complexion of their team and the way Terry Francona has managed. And he's gone to Andrew Miller early. He's gotten two-plus innings out of him. Yesterday, 2 2/3. The bridge to Cody Allen. It's just a formula that has worked. And again, I'm just so impressed because I would have taken them had they had Carlos Carrasco and Danny Salazar. Yep. When I saw those two were out, I said, I don't know if they have enough pitching. And they don't have great starting pitcher right now. You know, Corey Kluber gave them two solid starts. He obviously lost in game four there. But we know Kluber can be dominant. We've seen him for the last couple of years. They got just enough out of Josh Tomlin. Trevor Bauer, you know, that was the chance there for the Blue Jays. And, you know, when they couldn't take advantage of Bauer's pinky when he was exiting in the first inning, that really hurt. You know, that I think that was a huge lift for the Indians to get that game basically pitched by the entire bullpen.
Yep.
And to come away with that. So they've done a really good job. They've been a good team all year long. I would have loved to have seen, though, like how good they can be with Carrasco and Salazar. And I guess there is a chance maybe we see Salazar on the World Series roster.
Yeah, and that was actually my next question for you, was if we see Salazar on the World Series roster. I think given the amount of time, if the Cubs series does go seven, we may have a chance of that happening, and we'll see there. But it's interesting. This is now 2 years in a row, guys, where you brought up the point, Ronis, that it doesn't matter what Clint Frazier or Justice Sheffield become, because Andrew Miller, the MVP here of the ALCS, pitches them into the World Series. It doesn't matter what they gave up, because now they have, you know, they have a 50-50 shot right now to win the World Series. It makes no difference. And this is now 2 years in a row where a team that makes a big splash at the trade deadline, didn't matter what they gave up, because thanks to this acquisition they got there. It was Andrew Miller for the Indians, and last year for the Mets, it was Yoenis Cespedes. Without Yoenis Cespedes, they certainly don't make the World Series. So that's 2 years in a row. You got to give teams credit because they went for it, made the move, made the splash, and now they're in the World Series.
There was an interesting column in the Sunday Daily News 2 weeks ago about how this trade is working out for both sides.
Absolutely, sure.
To the average Yankee fan, you know, they're not used to, like, making a trade at the deadline and helping somebody else. It's, you know, for long history, it's been the other way around. But, you know, Miller's been terrific. You know, there's talk about Chapman hitting the free agent market again, you know, and maybe even coming back to the Yankees, which is interesting.
You know, it's interesting because most Yankee fans, they feel good. Like, I'm a Yankee fan, obviously. I feel good for Andrew Miller. I'm rooting for Andrew Miller because he was nothing but fantastic with the Yankees. I understood the Yankees needed to make a move. They did. And I'm very, very happy that he's continued to pitch as well as he did when he was with the Yankees.
Right,
and
because he's not doing it for the Red Sox.
He's not doing the Red Sox, and he happened to eliminate the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. So it worked out great. But I hope that Clint Frazier and Justin Sheffield are good, obviously, but I feel good about that. And I think
Frazier's such an incredible pickup, though. And if it works out for the Yankees, you're going to look about just like what John Harper said in the Daily News, it's that, you know, a trade that works out for both sides.
Absolutely, and I think that's how Detroit feels too. Last year, right, when they traded away Yoenis Cespedes to the Mets, and the Mets go to the World Series, you know, you got Michael Fulmer back. Michael Fulmer may very well be the Rookie of the Year in the AL this year.
Sort above expectations this year. I thought they were going to be good.
Right.
But I didn't think it was going to be this good. Almost like some of these pitchers from the Mets system, like him and Harvey, like, They didn't play their best ball until they got to the majors. And scouts sometimes say that sometimes guys don't blossom actually until they get to the major league level.
And you've heard, we saw it with Francisco Lindor even, right? That the old, he was bored in AAA. He wasn't, you know, he was not giving it his all, but it was just like, you know, he's been there and done that. He's ready for a new challenge. And Lindor is a perfect example of that, where a lot of people saw him in AAA, Scotty, and they said, this guy's going to be good, but I don't think anyone knew how good.
Yeah, and a lot of people speculated on Lindor after the first year that he couldn't keep up certain numbers because of what he did in the minors.
Yeah, exactly. He has been he's been tremendous obviously, for the Indians. He has developed not only to a leader, but the star of this team for Cleveland.
He has. I think he was a top prospect, and everyone knew he would be good. It's the power that's surprising, because we really didn't see it in the minors. But he was a key part in the series, good defensively. And, you know, the Indians have had a pretty good defensive team this year.
Let's go to the other side. Let's go to the NLCS here. As the Cubs, the bats finally broke out. Every one of us have been sitting here waiting for it, hoping it would happen. Would they break out? They did last night. Are you feeling better about the Cubs now?
Yeah, I thought it was key for them confidence-wise to get going. And that fourth inning was big. And then the Dodgers obviously had a chance there, an unfortunate bounce off Montgomery's glove. It should have been a double play. It wound up going for a two-run single for Justin Turner, but he got out of it. He was able to keep the game at a three-run lead after five, and then right after the Dodgers got those two runs back, five and the six for the Cubs. So I think this is huge. Anthony Rizzo getting going with a home run and three RBIs. They obviously need him. Addison Russell, who a lot of people were saying that Maddon should take him out of the lineup. He's slumping too much. Maddon stuck with him, and Russell came through. He almost hit a home run early in the game, right to the warning track. Then he did hit a home run in the fourth inning. So big win for the Cubs. Obviously, there's a lot of pressure on them at this point. Now they even it at two, and they got Lester Maeda tonight. That should be an advantage for the Cubs. So, obviously, the Cubs want to win this game because they know Clayton Kershaw is looming in game six.
Yeah, this is a big game, big spot for the Cubs. Do you think their bats will keep it going tonight, Scott?
I think against Maeda, the way he's looked, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, only because I think from watching a lot of Maeda this year, he's worn down.
Yeah, he has. He was so good early in the year, yeah.
And so I think that Maeda versus Lester, the Cubs should be favored in this game. I think maybe last night, a little pressure is off. Win tonight, you go home. We just got to win one out of two, which we saw in 2003. They were not able to do with Steve Bartman. We'll see what happens. Let's go to Rob from Salem. Rob, you are on the Road to Experts in the morning.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick trade question. I'm hurting at running back. I'm stacked at wide receiver, so I'm trying to get rid of one of my wide receivers. The free agent waivers ran last night, and everybody and their mom was picked up, including Nile Davis, Mike Davis, all the Davises. So I got offered to get – I can grab Latavius Murray and give up Demaryius Thomas. I have Jalen Richard as the backup and handcuffs. And I also have Cooks and Michael Thomas. I have Marvin Jones, and I have Allen Robinson, and I have Cam Meredith. The other offer I got was to get give away Marvin Jones and get Jay Ajayi. All the running backs in my league are gone, and I'm 3-3, and I'm out of a playoff spot already. So would you guys make any of those trades for either Latavius Murray or Ajayi, given that I have about three or four guys on my bench that are sitting there each week?
Now, you start out with the right idea. I have surplus at wide receiver. I want to pick a running back, but you're sounding too desperate with these deals, you know,
right?
Especially the second one. Marvin Jones, obviously, arguably still a wide receiver one. Jay Ajayi's had one big game, but he's still got, as much as I like him, he's still got a lot to prove. Demaryius Thomas for Latavius Murray. Latavius Murray's going to be part of a committee. He's been hurt. I think you know, other owners may be sensing your desperation here. I think you need to I think you need to get a better return. Who do you have a running back right now?
I have CJ Anderson, and that's it. So I'm planning on him decreasing in value as well. I'm sort of thinking, wow, maybe I need to make one of these trades this week, and if I'm hurting again next week, make another trade.
Yeah, I would,
I still,
you know, you still got a few days before Sunday here. I think both of these deals, I think, you know, especially the Ajayi deal, I don't think you're getting proper return here. I think you need to, you know, stand up a little more and, you know, get something more back here.
There's the problem that I've been saying for weeks. No one's trading a good running back. They're just not. It's a short supply.
Right.
So you're never going to get proper return. I think what you need to do is maybe shoot for a little bit lower, a Terrence West type.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people still think, oh, well, he's not going to keep the job. Well, he's been good, and he's probably going to run with it. Even a Jerick McKinnon, I think he could get better. So you're just not getting
it. I'm fine with getting Ajayi. Just he's given up too much there.
You're believing in Ajayi more than I
like
it.
I like it. I like Ajayi, but you know, when you look at two fantasy analysts here, the return is mixed. He's given up too much.
I know, no question about it. All right, make a prediction for tonight's NLCS game number five. We'll start with you, Scotty. Lester versus Miami. Who you got?
Cubs 7, Dodgers 5.
Ronis?
Cubs win.
Cubs win. I also take the Cubs. Guess we'll see the Dodgers win tomorrow. Hey, Fantasy BFFs, Nato DeFino, Adam Ronis, and Jake Seeley are up next. The Road Westerns will be back tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Eastern. For Scott Engel, Adam Ronis, I'm Greg Sussman. Thanks so much for listening. And that's a wrap.